Ron wins the Masters Marathon.
Yes, welcome back to the Teed Up Golf Podcast, episode 2 for Masters Week. We are absolutely pumped and we are flying, and we are joined by a man who has been there and done that in Ollie Goss, the 2014 low amateur from the Masters tournament, has been so kind to join us and take us behind the ropes and inside the mind of what the players will be going through and how they'll be planning on preparing for Augusta National this week. Like I alluded to before, Ollie is the only Australian in history to win low amateur honours at the Masters, and he has some incredible insights as to how to play the course, and we even build a player as to who can win this week at Augusta National. Ollie takes us through some of his amazing memories, and he recalls some of the shots that he hit, some of the feelings that he had, and just some of the sights that he saw at Augusta National throughout the week. So thankful to have Ollie join us on the podcast. Let's get over to him right now. Ollie Goss, welcome to the Teed Up Golf Podcast. Masters Week, and you're a man who's been there in amongst it. Good to have you on the pod. How are you, mate?
Yeah, good, mate. Thanks for having us on the show, finally. Masters Week, exciting week, especially for me. It's hard to believe that it's been 10 years, yep. 10 years since I was there. But no, I remember it like it was yesterday. So love chatting about it each and every year.
Mate, I would chat about it each and every day, not each and every year if I played it before. But 10 years, mate, must have gone bloody quick. But before we get into the pod, your birthday's this Friday. You turned 20.
Yeah.
Your 20th birthday, you're playing in the Masters. What was it like being Correct. A kid, getting there? And you would have been so young, mate. Like, on reflection.
Yeah, it was. I was 19 at the start of the week and turned 20 on the Saturday. So my only real main goal for the week was to make the cut and play on my birthday. That's all I really cared about. I didn't really put any expectations on like a placing. I felt like that would just add a bit too much pressure and I wouldn't enjoy the week. But yeah, I just wanted to make the cut and play on my birthday, and I did. And probably the coolest thing that's ever happened, or one of the coolest things from the week, was that when I tapped in, you know, the fans are crazy and they know exactly what's going on, and they knew it was my birthday and they all sung happy birthday for me when I tapped in on 18. Like, it was pretty special. And funny. I won't ever forget that, you know.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. Absolutely.
But yeah, turning 30 this Friday, hard to believe.
Nah, that a boy. getting on, mate. But mate, let's chat about it. You're the first Australian in history to win low amateur honours at the Masters. Bubba Watson won it back in 2014. It was a year after Adam Scott won it, so you would have been in the presentation ceremony getting your low am trophy when Scotty was presenting Bubba with his jacket. Take us back to that moment. And how all that was for you as well.
Yeah, to be fair, the whole week was very surreal. Like, I knew what was happening was special, but I didn't realize how special everything was, especially Butler Cabin. Like, it was just me, Bubba, and Scotty in the room talking to Jim Nance, and it was just really casual. Like, I didn't really think much of it. And then, you know, people start to talk about it and you realize that there's, you know, hundreds of millions of people watching that,
yep.
You know, and you're like, you look back on it and you go, wow, like, I didn't realize at the time, but that was, yeah, absolutely insane. But I remember, you know, Bubba winning for the second, I think that was the second time he won. He was so caught up in winning, he didn't really like pay me too much attention, to be honest. And I was like, oh, come on, mate, like, you know, a handshake would have been nice. But Scotty was great. Like, I'd known Scotty by that point a couple of years. I played with him a few times, and
yeah,
he was really good. But yeah, the whole experience was just so surreal. All of it, yeah.
Yeah, I get that vibe from Bubba, mate. I don't think it's a you thing. I think it's just a Bubba Watson thing. Yeah. Mate, like, take us inside. So the purpose of this podcast, Ollie, is we're going to get you on in a couple of weeks to go through your golfing journey, and an incredible journey it was. But let's go back to qualifying for the Masters, which is actually pretty incredible. You finished runners-up to Matt Fitzpatrick, who's now a major winner in the USAM, which you got invited to the US Open and to the Masters the following year, which was 2014. Take us back to that. So the USAM, for those who don't know, it's the biggest amateur tournament on the planet.
And you're rolled over there as an 18, 19-year-old and, you know, stumped up and come second to bloke who's top 10 player, probably going to go down in history as one of the all-time greats in Europe. But take us back to that point in your life and what, how it all, the whirlwind about all that went.
Well, the year before I played in Colorado and made the quarters. Justin Thomas beat me in the quarters and I feel like I could have beaten him. So I was kind of going based on the previous year, I wanted to improve upon my finish from the year before. So, you know, I was really determined to have a good week and I did. I had, you know, qualified really well. I think I qualified fourth or something, or it might not have been that. It was pretty high. So I had a good seed. Beat some pretty good players going through the match play. Like I beat Xander Schauffele in the round of 16s or 32s and beat some good players. And then, yeah, you know, Matt just hit me in the final. And, you know, the main difference was he was hitting it so short back then. He's gained a lot of distance, all credit to him. But he hit, I think he missed like two or three fairways in 36 holes. And, you know, the roughs are foot long and I was about 50%. And even though he was chasing four irons up front of the green, I couldn't get my wedge onto the green because the rough was so thick. But yeah, overall, like an amazing week. Had a really good couple of years leading up to that week. But yeah, it's on. If you've watched the last couple of seasons of Full Swing, you can see the moment that Matt got the victory there, which is cool to be on Netflix, but not for the right reasons.
Yeah, you're the bloke who lost, mate, on Netflix.
Yeah, you see me for about 3 seconds just standing on the side of the green just watching Matt win. So
mate, from your little cameo, I think you've endeared yourself more to the golfing public than Justin Thomas did on this season. So we'll give him a drive-by there, JT. Yeah, everyone knows I'm not a massive fan. But, mate, that's incredible. And then you get your ticket to Augusta. You roll up to your first major, which just would have been incredible, driving up Magnolia. Tell us about that and then we'll get into your practice rounds and then sort of the build up, and we can just take the listeners to the podcast inside the ropes for the week and how you thought you
were. Yeah, for sure. So fortunately, well, I was going to college at the time. I was at the University of Tennessee, which is only 5.5 hours away from Augusta. So I was able to go down a couple times before the week and get a few practice rounds in. So I made a weekend trip in Feb. So I basically drive down Saturday morning, play that afternoon, spend the night, and then play Sunday morning, and then drive back to Knoxville in between tournaments. So it was a busy period, but I was able to make two trips. I went in Feb, then went in March to prepare. And then I think I went down the Friday before and got a few extra practice rounds in before the event. But yeah, driving down Magnolia, look, that place is as good as everyone thinks it is. It does not disappoint one bit. Like whatever you can imagine Augusta is, it just exceeds beyond your imagination. Like it is absolutely incredible. Like every flower, blade of grass, just like the aura of the clubhouse and the scenery and the trees and just everything is just incredible. And obviously it's a dream come true. Like, you know, as a junior growing up, how many putts did we all hold to win the Masters? You know, on the putting green at your home track when you're a junior. So it was just really special to go there and have an awesome week and have that experience. And, you know, as we said, it was 10 years ago, but I can remember so much of that week like it was yesterday.
That's good. I'm glad you can remember it, mate, because it's what we're going to be talking about throughout the pod. Mate, let's talk about getting on the property, hitting the range and getting into your practice rounds. Obviously, Adam Scott had won it 2 years earlier. Jason Day was at the peak of his powers. Leish was in the field that year. So, you know, Aussies have had pretty rich history there in more recent times as well. But can you remember your practice rounds, advice you got, and how you sort of built the week up that way?
Yeah, no, I remember a lot. Like I remember driving down on Friday and I organised a 9-hole cracky round with Jace on the Saturday, I believe. And Jace was world number one at the time, or he was getting close.
And that was really interesting to watch him go about his thing, how he kind of goes about his practice rounds. And he was with his old coach, Cole Swatton, and they had like another guy who was like a stats guy. So it was interesting to watch him go through that process. And if those who've never met Jace, he's such an incredible guy, like really outgoing, really friendly. And like he didn't shut up. Like he was trying to give me so much assistance and help and knowledge. Just it was so much. Like I couldn't take it all in. And then I played with Scotty Sendo and Stephen Bowditch on the Tuesday, and it was like the complete opposite with Scotty. Like Scotty's very, he's a really nice guy, but like very introverted, like keeps to himself, you know, has his like tight circle, kind of like Cam does. But like getting info out of Scotty was hard. And I'm trying to like ask, I didn't want to like probe too much, but I wanted to ask some questions, but it was a little bit difficult getting information. No, we had a really good round. It was kind of the first. It was really funny. I tell this story quite often, but I remember walking from 9 to 10, and there's these narrow ropes where the players walk. It was probably like 50 meters or so, and Scotty is ahead, and I'm talking to Sendon next to me, and there's like women like running over to where Scotty is, and like reaching out and like touching him, and like going absolutely crazy. And I'm 19. I'm going, what? Like, what is going on? Like, it was so, I've never seen this before. So it was like, you know, the first taste I had of that, which was hilarious. But no, I had a really good prep, because I've been down a couple of times before. I knew that I didn't have to go hard, you know, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. I could kind of take it easy. Because, you know, when you're there, like, it's very easy to overdo it and do too much, and then you're absolutely knackered for the event. So, like, when you're at the Masters, you really need to treat it like every other event, instead of, you know, really tying yourself out before Thursday.
All right, let's talk about the prep, mate, and getting, you know, your head around and getting a plan together to play Augusta National, which is notoriously a really tough course and a very different course to what we see on the PGA Tour regularly. You know, trajectory control, pitching control, just control of your distances, different shot shaping, all that sort of stuff. You would have had a team around you to help you from college, obviously, and your coaches as well that you had. But can you talk us through sort of the planning and how methodical you were in those months with those practice rounds you had before the tournament started, and sort of what you thought, and is there any sort of shots and trajectory that you worked on leading up to it that you can recall?
The best thing I can say is that that course will test every single part of your game. Like, there is not one area. If one area is lacking, it will grab you really quick. You know, you've got to be able to do everything, hit it high, low, left, right, fades, draws, off a downslope. You've got to be able to hit every shot off every single slope. You know, distance control has got to be on point. But probably the most beneficial thing I did was get a local caddy, because what they told me is that it takes a very, very long time to truly understand the greens. And, you know, they say it takes like 8 to 10 years to really know the greens back to front, upside down, inside out. So trying to do that in 5 rounds would have been impossible. So I kind of left a lot of that kind of stuff to him. Like, just having him there was a huge relief to me, so I didn't have to stress out about a lot of stuff. Like, if I wasn't sure, I could ask him and really trust his knowledge and experience around the greens, you know, to different pins, what you would do here, all that kind of stuff. So the local caddy was massive. Brian Tam, he was unreal. And everyone that's played since I've played, I always recommend to get a local caddy, because their knowledge is just, honestly, it's invaluable.
That's cool. Let's chat about your shot shaping and sort of the prep you had to do for that. Augusta National's a right to left bias course off the tee, which is really common knowledge now, especially with the amount of lefties who are sort of coming through and winning of recent time. What was sort of the preparation with that? I'm not sure how you naturally shape the ball, but was there certain ways that you had to sort of learn to hit different clubs, or did you chuck anything different in the bag to get yourself ready for the week?
Yeah, I think at that point, from memory, I didn't have a three wood for years. Like, I just played like a driving iron, two iron, and a driver. But that wasn't going to work. So we chucked a three wood in for that week, mainly for shots off like 10, which you literally need to snap hook it off 10. But there's a few, there are a few right to left shots that were pretty tough. Like 13, you need to shape it right to left. Even number two, which I tend to struggle to draw the ball back then. I definitely prefer to work the ball left to right. Like, I find that it's way more consistent and reliable than drawing the ball. But, man, every shot out there is just scary. I think the thing that people will get surprised about when they go there first is the amount of slope and undulation that's there. Like, I remember walking down 10 and in the gallery, you know, they're walking through the rough and, like, there was people slipping over. It was so steep. And just some of the shots that you have to hit off these sloping lies, you know, especially like into 15, that was really scary. You've got to hit some really crazy shots off some really unique lies, which is probably the biggest shock to me. Like, I could work the ball both ways, not too bad, but it was just hitting off the slopes that probably made it hard.
Trajectory and ball control. So, you know, you can't really land the ball on a lot of the greens because, you know, it's completely rolling off. And the trajectory, like in Australia, where you play, the courses are a lot firmer here than they are in the States. Mm-hmm. Your college golf probably helped you with that. But what do you remember about that? Like, thinking, like, say the 15th, you can't hit like a low draw into that green with a long iron. You're going to go out the back, roll mm-hmm. down, and you're cooking yourself over the back with that mm-hmm. impossible pitch. But what sort of preparation did you do to get ready for that sort of stuff as well?
To be honest, not a whole lot. Like, with my game, I was very strong tee to green and hit it a long way, and I hit it quite high. So, like, in that regard, like, I was at quite an advantage compared to most guys. Like, I could stop the ball on the greens if I needed to, and I had that ability to do that. So I knew that I was at a big advantage to most people, and I think that's, you know, part of the reason why I did well that week.
Yeah.
I think one of the things that people don't take into consideration is knowing the grain of the green into their approach shot. You do have to be very conscious of the grain on any time you hit into the green. You've got to be really wary of the grain. I'll give you an example. Like, into 15, the par 5 down the hill with the water at the front, they chuck that pin on the left there. And if you lay up on the right, the grain of the green is from back right to front left towards the water. So if you lay up on the right side of the fairway, you would normally think that that's the play. Like, the green opens up, you've got more green to work with, it's deeper. But as soon as that ball starts spinning, it starts going down grain.
Yeah.
And then catches up speed, and, you know, you could go in the water.
Yeah.
So when we were laying up, we were always trying to lay up on the left side. So you're hitting back into the grain on that left pin. So it stops quicker. But again, very hard shot. Like, you've honestly got to land it on a beach towel. Otherwise, you know, short, it's in the water, long, it's over the back, and you're chipping downhill down the grain, which is what I ended up doing. But you've really got to be conscious of the grain every time you hit into the grain.
Let's chat about some of your most memorable shots and or most challenging shots that you had when you're out there. Do you have a shot that sticks out in your memory and you'll be telling your grandkids about one day that you go, yep, that was the coolest thing I've ever done?
I do remember being so nervous every single day on the first tee. Like, you know, when you get the, like, a bit of adrenaline in your stomach and, like, you get the butterflies in your stomach. Like, I had that in my fingernails and my toenails. Like, my entire body, I feel like I couldn't control. And I just snap hooked it every day off the first, and I just had no control over what I was doing. It progressively got less of a snap hook to the point where it was in the left rough. But even over on the ninth fairway, it's not too hard of a shot over the trees back onto the green. But I think when I hit the green in two on 13, like, I absolutely, because the tees, they've moved the tee back quite a lot, a long way. Was it this year or last year?
It was last year.
But when I played it was forward. I remember creaming a drive over the corner on 13 and having like a 9-9 in to 13, which was pretty cool.
Yeah,
there's not too many shots that I do remember. I remember a few of the bad ones. Like I remember getting the wrong yardage on 14 and hitting it over the back into and over the back behind 14 is number 10, but it's like 80 meters down the hill. And if you get it going long, like it's going all the way down the hill. And my ball landed in the bin.
Oh.
They have like these like plastic bins behind the green. It landed in the bin, which was so lucky.
Yeah.
Because I just took a little drop under the bin and chipped on the par. But if it didn't land in the bin, it was going to go like another 50 to 75 meters down the hill.
That's nuts.
Yeah.
Yeah, mate, let's build the perfect golfer for Augusta National if we can. Sort of like there's so many players who can win it. You know, there's folks on LIV like Koepka, obviously Rahm's there to defend. Scheffler's best player in the world by country mile at the moment. You've got Smithy, you've got Minwoo, you've got Jason Day who's in great form. Russell Henley's in really good form. Everyone has their strengths, everyone has their weaknesses. But if you could build a golfer, what would be sort of some of the keys – characteristics that you'd put into their game that would sort of Augusta proof them?
I would have someone who was incredibly strong tee to green, like they have to hit it long and be able to shape it both ways. That would be, I think, length, especially nowadays. If you've got some length, you're competitive every week. You know, there's not one tournament that you're not going to have a chance at winning, whereas some of the shorter guys, you know, they've got to have, you know, kind of the stars aligned for them to be in the mix. So I think length is an absolute must. And you've just got to have someone who's so polished. Every part of their game has got to be up to scratch. As I said before, there can't be one bit that's just lacking. Maybe your bunker shots, if you're hitting every fairway and every green, you can probably get away with having a poor bunker game. But then even then, like everything has just got to be that good.
Yeah.
I don't think there's one thing that you or two things that you need to have to win. Everything needs to be on. And we've seen that with all the winners. They've had everything in the past. So yeah, you're right. Like not everyone can win, unfortunately. But those guys that can, they've got all the tools. Like Minwoo's got all the tools. Cam's got all the tools now. All of the potentials have all the tools.
That's cool, mate. And who's going to win it? Pick your winner. I'll put you on the spot.
I've been asked this so much this week. And I think that betting on golf is probably the worst. Golf is the worst sport to bet on.
It's very hard.
In the world because the odds are so not in your favor. Like I remember when I played, like I had some people who I knew like bet on me to win. And I was like, you're an idiot. As much as I believe in myself.
Yeah.
Like, and I think I was paying like, you know, 500 to one. And I'm like, that's you know, that's not right. But even like, I think Scheffler's might be paying like 12 to one. Like even though I don't think the odds are that good, you know, but I think it'd be hard to go past Scotty, Rahm and Cam. Cam loves it there. I don't know if he's finished outside the top seven, the amount of times he's been there. Rahm's obviously won it. And Scotty's, you know, the best player in the world.
Yeah.
Who would I want to see win it is probably Minwoo.
Yeah.
Just because, you know, I've grown up with the bloke. We're from the same club. You know, he's a couple of years younger than me, but I would love to see him, you know, lift the trophy up. And look, he's got the ability to. He's got all the tools he needs.
Yeah, he's got the swagger. He loves it. Watching him around the Australian and
it's so funny. It's so funny, man. I know we're getting a little bit off topic, but you know, I've always known him as just that kid from the golf club.
Yeah.
You know, and when he's at the golf club, he's not that person at all.
Yeah.
And it's funny for me to see like him on social media with like fan groups out on the course with like chef hats, and I'm like, what? Like this is just so. He's like, this is, you know, this is Minwoo. It's crazy.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'd love to see Min get up.
Yeah, it'd be unbelievable. At the end of the week, for sure. Be great for Aussie golf, mate. He's doing good things, and he's. If it's not the hat he likes to wear, he's doing it well. So good on him.
Yeah.
And last one, McIlroy's chances. I want to get an expert's opinion on where they think McIlroy can go this year. He's changed up his prep. He's trying something different. He hasn't put as much pressure on himself by, you know, going to the property 2 weeks before and slaying it. But how do you think he'll go?
Again, I was talking about this today with someone. As much as McIlroy, again, has all the ability to do it, I think that Augusta is just going to be his kryptonite. And I like where he hit it on 10 that year, it's like 70 degrees left. Like it's not a snap hook. It's, you know, it's not great. Would I like to see him get up? Of course. Like, you know, all of the struggles he's had around there, I think it's his kryptonite, that place. Yeah. I think he'll put himself in contention a few years, but I'm not too sure if he's gonna get it over the line. But I would love to see him do it for sure.
Yeah, love it, mate. Well, mate, thanks for your insights and course knowledge, because you know we can watch it all. We can watch everything that we need to on, you know, your KOs, and you can look it up. But having someone who's had their feet under the desk around, you know, Disneyland for golfers is unbelievable, and I can't wait to get you on, actually talk about everything you've done before that and, you know, post-Masters, because I reckon you've got a pretty cool story to tell, mate. So thanks for giving us some time this week. It's been a pleasure to have you on. Can't wait to get you back on a bit more regularly, mate, and chat some golf. So thanks for your time.
Thanks for having us on, mate. Really looking forward to the week, and we'll catch up in a few weeks,
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Tee It Up Golf Podcast. If you could please help support the show by hitting the subscribe button on whatever platform you are listening on and giving us a rating of 5 stars. It goes such a long way to help us progress the show. Also, jump over to our Instagram page, Tee It Up Pod. We're on TikTok, we're on YouTube, we're doing all that sort of stuff. So to stay up to date with what is going on with the show, for feedback, guest suggestions, or advertisement inquiries, please email us at hello@teeitupod.com. Cheers.